Welcome everyone to the biggest show in TO, Sports from the Six. I'm your co-host Joe Narsa, alongside my lovely, talented, and beautiful co-host Flip Livingstone. Flip, what's going on, buddy?
Are you sure I'm all those things?
You're just bigger than me. So, well, like, I give you as much as you can.
Appreciate that.
But you deserve it.
I'm quite large.
But lovely.
Thank you. The grocery bill is racking up. It's becoming an issue. So if all you out there listening could get me a job of some kind, I'm going to start, selling myself out to the highest bidder. So,
hashtag GoFundMe.
Hashtag good start to the show, Joe. Now on to something less sad. How about sports?
Sports is pretty exciting and happy. Lately in the city of Toronto, which is, it always, I feel like, weirds us out.
Yeah.
Like, you wake up and you look at, your sports app and you're like, oh, wow, we didn't lose.
No, you're expecting, some guy to, smack you over the back of the head and go, you're dreaming, pal.
Yeah, exactly.
Wake up.
Just like, oh, my God, the Raptors have won 9 in a row? And then you wake up and you're like, oh, we still have Rudy Gay. Like, you're expecting that to happen.
Well, but even in real, that's a joke, but even in real life circumstance, You have the Raptors at winning 9 in a row, going for 10. Mm-hmm. Franchise record would be 10. And then you can just flip the script and have a look at the old Sad Sack Leafs. We need a sound effect there. Wah, wah, something like that. Excellent. That was excellent. Yeah, so you never have just smooth sailing in Toronto sports. There's your perfect example. You have both ends of the spectrum. With that being said, at least the Raptors are playing exciting, competitive basketball, and they're beating good teams.
And we were saying before, I mean, we've been probably the Raptors' toughest critics, and it's not like we're softening up on them because they're winning.
Maybe a little bit, but you're right. We have been especially hard on the Raptors. AK has been upset with us.
Big time.
And I know once they hit that 9th in a row, he's just wants to stick it to us. But
yeah.
Hey, he knows. He's been saying that they're a better team than their record had reflected.
Right.
He had been saying all along, so props to AK. There you go. There's your shout-out, pal, on the show, showing you some love. But the team deserves credit. They're playing well, and they're playing well without their biggest addition in DeMar Carroll. So.
Well, and it's been exciting to watch and special. I mean, looking at every single game, you have DeMar DeRozan, who's been playing absolutely outstanding. And although, it is a contract year for DeMar DeRozan, I don't look at him as the type of player that is doing this for the money. He has had consistent growth in his career. He works hard. He tries to get better, and he does get better. But when he's not on, Kyle Lowry is on. And it's impressive to watch two guys lead this group of, they're a solid team. And that's interesting to watch. And I know it might not potentially be a successful chemistry in the NBA because it's a tough team league to win in.
Time will tell.
But what's impressive is watching the Raptors, I really get the sense of these guys are a team. They enjoy playing their game. And I will give a little shout-out to Dwayne Casey as well,
mm-hmm.
because his team are in the top 10 both offensively and defensively.
They've turned it around statistically, and it will be interesting to see what our guest thinks about that, especially their win streak. But I think that's what really is showing that they're a better team. Is those stats, the defensive stats. Casey's supposed to be a defense-first coach. I've said it all along, and he said it from Jump Street when he got here. It was supposed to be pound the rock, defense first. We're going to win games by keeping the other team's best scorers to a minimum. And that's starting to happen.
Yeah, I mean, Israel Fair from Yahoo Sports will be joining us in just a moment. But I think that's a great point from you.
Thank you.
When you look at Casey's philosophy thus far, he's made a lot of claims that he wasn't able to back up. He was able to back up half of it. When he wanted the Raptors to be a great defensive team, they could not score.
Mm.
But when he wanted the Raptors to be an offensive juggernaut, they were, but they couldn't defend.
Enigma team. We've said it. And they were definitely an enigma team.
And in this last 9, what we've realized is the Raptors are able to shut you down when they want to.
Mm.
The Raptors are able to score when they want to.
Mm-hmm.
And in these last 9 games, have been able to do that all at the exact same time. So it's been impressive for the Toronto Raptors, that is for sure. And joining us now from Yahoo Sports, Israel Fair. Israel, how are you doing, buddy?
Hey, guys. It's good to be on. I'm good.
So it's been a very exciting time, I think, to be a Toronto Raptors fan, although some would say fans are not overly excited because I think they're smart thinkers. But in this latest stretch, I mean, the Raptors are going for their 10th win, straight win in a row, which would be a franchise record. What's impressed you the most with the Raptors in this recent stretch?
Well, I think from top to bottom, this is, of course, last year they started off so well, but the stretch here is the most impressive stretch I think that they've had in the DeMar DeRozan era of the last 7 years or so. And it's impressive because it appears to be sustainable. Last year when they started off hot and 24-6, I think the fans were excited. But as you said, I think this is a smart fan base. And I think that they realized as soon as they started to look at the defensive numbers that it wasn't a sustainable stretch. And that's what's really impressive about what the team's doing right now. And it's from top to bottom. It's the way DeMar DeRozan is playing. It's the way Kyle Lowry is playing. And the bench, which they remodeled in the offseason, bringing in Corey Joseph, Bismack Biyombo, moving Terrence Ross from the starting lineup back to the bench, and then having Patrick Patterson around as well. They're playing a tremendous basketball right now. And I think we saw it in the Clippers game where they were a huge part in and won that game for the Raptors, considering that the starting lineup wasn't great in that stretch. So it's a weird Eastern Conference from top to bottom in that respect. I think we all can agree that the Cavaliers are still the favorite. So the last week or so in Cleveland has not necessarily put some doubt in that, but at least makes it seem like it's not as a slam dunk as it seemed. And I think the Raptors are right there behind them as the second-best team in the East.
Israel, you mentioned that, you know, the Cleveland Cavaliers haven't really been performing up to snuff, up to their standards. You know, they just fired their head coach, Blatt, replacing him with Tyronn Lue. The Raptors currently sit 2.5 games back of Cleveland. Do you see them moving anywhere from out of the second position? I know the Eastern Conference, especially the Atlantic, tends to be a little bit soft. Can you see the Raptors increasing past Cleveland up into that first spot, or do you think they're going to be sitting there at the second spot?
If I had to bet on it, I would say that they'll finish two. They've gone through a tougher stretch with a lot of road games, and what they've done on this homestand, the current homestand, where they're going for their sixth win in the homestand, 10th win overall, against the Knicks on Thursday, is won the games that they're supposed to win and solidified that standing as the number two seed. They have kind of a weird schedule in February because of the All-Star game coming here, so they don't have nearly as many home games. But then in the month of March, they have another similar stretch where they play a ton of games at home. And if they can do the same thing that they've done on this homestand, in the March homestand, then sure, it's possible that they could maybe pass Cleveland and make a run. But I think that the Cavaliers are probably just going to end up with that one seed. They'll figure it out. We're talking about them like they're having issues and they still have that number one seed. But right. To be the two seed for the Raptors in this Eastern Conference that is really jumbled compared to last year when it was Cleveland and Atlanta and everybody else, there's a lot of intrigue in the East this year.
And I think what you were hitting on just now with, you know, if you were a betting man, you would still put Cleveland in that first spot. To me, is the reason why I think a lot of fans in Toronto are looking at this Raptors team right now with the thought of, okay, yeah, I know they're playing great and it's awesome, but I think there's a little, you know, a little feeling in the pit of their stomach, like, ultimately, as good as this Raptors team is, there is no pinnacle, there's no top of the mountain because of the teams that they're going to have to get through to get there. So my question to you is, what do you believe the Raptors need to acquire or do to get to that upper echelon next level where the next time we're speaking, we could say, oh, well, yeah, the Raptors could definitely take over first spot and be a legitimate contender?
I'm not sure there's anything that they can do this year, to be quite honest. It's going to be tough, and that's sort of just the way that the NBA is. You sort of need a big superstar to win, and the teams that have those stars right now with Cleveland and with the Warriors, with Steph Curry, also have incredible depth and just tremendous basketball teams. And while the Raptors have really built a nice team, and DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry are playing at that all-star level, I don't know if there's anything that they can do this season. Long-term, I think you're always looking to add another scorer, someone that can create his own shot, specifically on the Raptors roster. I think you're looking long-term to add someone that can play a power forward position, not necessarily a stretch four, but Luis Scola is just a stopgap. So if you look at that starting lineup with Lowry here for at least another 2 years, Valanciunas getting the contract extension, Damari Carroll is going to be here for an extended period of time. And really, I guess that would be the guy for the stretch run here that you're looking to get back, have him healthy for the stretch run, have him healthy for the playoffs. At least he presents at least he's a guy that can ideally guard LeBron James one-on-one. We all know that that's easier said than done, but
right.
From the guys across the league, he's a guy that fits that profile. He's a guy that's done it before. And that's really another positive of this run, is that they've been able to do it without Damari Carroll, a guy that they spent a lot of money to bring in the offseason. Really the first stamp that Masai Ujiri has put on this team since he's been the general manager. He's kept the guys that were here, done some extensions with some of the core players, but that was really his first outside of the organization move in free agency anyway that made a big splash. And I guess that's really what the Raptor fans can hold on to hope, is that Carroll comes back and he's healthy. And when we saw him playing well during early stretches this season, didn't necessarily fit offensively, but you definitely had to like what you saw on the defensive end, and that's the reason that they brought him in.
Before we shift over to the Jays, Israel, I'm interested. One of the things Joe and I constantly talk about on this show, and you briefly touched on it, is that lack of a go-to guy. The lack of maybe, of course, not a Steph Curry caliber player, but you know that guy that is the number one. He's the bona fide number one scorer on your team, the leader on and off the court. DeMar and Kyle have been amazing this year. DeMar, especially, in my opinion, has really elevated his game. I know it's a contract year for him. That added incentive is there. But what Joe and I constantly say is, do they really need that leading score? Do they need a number one guy? Or can they do it with almost a lead by committee with DeMar and Kyle? I wonder what you think about that.
The way DeRozan's playing right now, you can feel good going forward with that. And really, that's the big franchise decision, regardless of what happens the rest of the regular season, regardless of what happens in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. You just mentioned that DeRozan is going to be a free agent because he's going to opt out of that contract because he's going to be able to get double what he's owed on that player option.
Right.
And there's going to be teams interested, and this is really going to be the first big decision that the front office with Masai Ujiri are going to have to make. Is they're going to have to decide, is this good enough with Lowry in for at least another couple of years, having Carroll long-term, Valanciunas with an extension himself. And if they give DeRozan what's going to be close to a max contract, if not the maximum that they can offer him, then they are pretty hamstrung with the cap for the next handful of years. So that's really the big decision. The way that he's playing right now, I completely agree. He's absolutely elevated his game. You look at the numbers. He's more efficient. He's going to the basket more. He's become a much better passer. Sometimes there are a few lapses on the defensive end, but I think overall he stepped his game up defensively. Having Damari Carroll there would be an even better benefit for that. Same like we've seen with the addition of Corey Joseph, is that that's allowed Kyle Lowry to be freed up a little bit offensively, and has helped him on the defensive end as well, because he doesn't necessarily have to take the number one guard player that's on the floor when he shares the floor with Joseph. So the team, you have to feel comfortable with what they have with the team right now. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to lock into DeRozan, then you have to believe that Jonas Valanciunas and Terrence Ross, and Terrence Ross is playing really well of late. When he's hitting his jumpers, when he's able to make a couple dribbles, move the defense, go to the rim, and play some defense, He makes it look really easy. He's an athletic player. He's an impressive player. And I think fans have been waiting to see a sustained period of that consistency. And the same thing with Valanciunas. And I think that's another positive this season, is that Jonas was playing really well before the injury, got hurt, and now he's come back and he hasn't missed a step, but we're not paying as much attention to it because the way that DeRozan is playing, the way that Lowry's playing, the way that the bench is playing, and just the way that the team overall is playing and the way they're racking up wins. So it's a good spot. Is it a championship spot this year? Probably not, but you just look at the teams out west, and as good as Cleveland might be in the East, I think we which say that the Warriors, the Spurs, and the Thunder are the top three teams in the NBA.
Yeah, the West is pretty scary.
So, Israel, let's make you the general manager of the Raptors going forward. I got two tough questions for you. Would you sign DeMar DeRozan to a max deal? And second question, would you rethink the choice of Sting singing in the All-Star game?
More important. More
the more important question, does Sting represent the Six and the We the North brand?
Well, I'm glad that I don't have to make the first decision. I think that if I had to, I would re-sign DeMar DeRozan the way that he's played. He seems like he is still, I think he can take it to another level. Maybe not quite that elite level, but we're talking about a guy that if everything goes right and you expect it to, he'll be named to his second All-Star game in 3 years. Last year had an injury, and that sort of derailed his year. And just the way that he's playing this year, it's sure, there's those mid-range jumpers that drive some fans crazy, especially since they're not in the flow of the offense. But overall, you guys are right. His game has gone to another level, and I think he's a core player. He's a guy that I know the front office really likes as a person, what he represents, his work ethic. So from that standpoint, yes, I think that I would opt to keep him. On the music side, yeah, I mean, the Twitter sphere has been abuzz with the news that that Sting is going to be doing halftime. I have to say I'm surprised. I thought that it would be a pretty big slam dunk. There would be someone with ties to Canada, maybe a little bit younger, too.
Maybe a global ambassador.
Yeah.
Maybe they're going to they pull out, you know, maybe just like they like Biebs sneaks under like his cape or something and, you know, bang, then a big surprise. At least
sure
Carly Rae Jepsen.
Episode.
I hope so. At least a little Carly Rae. I don't know.
Man, it might be too late to say sorry. That's all I know.
Whoa, too soon.
See, and that's what's been great about the Raptors so far is the way that Masai Ujiri has crafted this team since he's gotten here. Our biggest issues have now become, why is Sting singing the All-Star game? And not, oh my God, why are we on a 16-game losing skid? But I don't think the same sense is felt right now with probably the other best team in Toronto, in the Toronto Blue Jays, since this shift in management. Israel, do you feel the management, like, how do you feel they've done thus far? Since grabbing the reins, and probably, I think Shapiro has the worst start to any executive in Toronto history, and it's not as much on him, it's just his start, essentially, was just not great. But how do you feel they've done so far?
Well, I think overall it's too early to know. It's going to take a while. I think we all realize that when Alexandropoulos decided not to come back, that you took a look at the roster, you looked at the contract, and that this team in 2016 will still very much be a reflection of what Alexandropoulos wanted to do at the major league level. You're right, the start for Mark Shapiro could not have gone any worse.
Oh, I know.
The way that Anthopoulos was almost revered for the way that he put this team together. It's not even just the trade deadline move, but it was also dating back to getting Jose Bautista, signing him to a team-friendly contract. Same thing with Edwin Encarnacion. There's a larger conversation there with if maybe they got lucky with Edwin having put him on waivers, lost him to Oakland, and so on and so forth. But that's the life as a general manager. And I think the thing with Alex was that people felt that they could connect with him as a fellow Canadian, as someone that was pretty charismatic when he spoke. In my experiences with Alex, I always enjoyed talking to him. He was very down to earth. So Shapiro definitely came into a situation, and we all saw how much excitement there was around the Blue Jays in that playoff run, and really the whole country was captivated by it. But in the offseason, as far as what they've done, moves-wise, didn't matter who was running the team. The Blue Jays weren't going to re-sign David Price, so that's a non-starter. Otherwise, I actually have to say I really liked the move to get Drew Storen. I thought Ben Revere is a nice player, a guy that you can rely on. I'll miss him in the clubhouse because he was a good quote. But I think that when you can replace that production with Michael Saunders assuming health, and even assuming that Dalton Pompey can take that step and play some left field, or allowing them potentially to have Jose Bautista DH a little bit and have an outfield with Pompey, Saunders, and Pilar. I like that move. In general, I think that there wasn't too much for them to do, and it really seemed like their focus when Shapiro came in, and then same thing with the new GM Ross Atkins, is that they're going to focus in on some different things that they want to do with the minor league system, how they're managing that. So that was sort of the big schism apparently between Anthopoulos and Shapiro, that Shapiro was not exactly thrilled that Anthopoulos gave up over 10 minor league prospects to make those trades at the deadline. And it'll be very interesting. It's going to be a conversation that I think we're having for throughout the season, and for really as long as Anthopoulos is in Los Angeles, and for as long as Shapiro is running the team.
Well, since you pretty much just answered all of the questions I had ready for you, Israel, great job, by the way. You're killing it. I wanted to ask you, you know, I was going to ask you about left field. I was going to ask you about the outfield, but let's put the GM cap back on you. How do you see the end of this rotation shaking out? I know tons have been made about grumblings over getting J.A. Happ, which I personally like the move. You know, Jesse Chavez has been brought in. How do you see the end of that rotation, fourth and fifth spot specifically, shaking out?
Sure. Well, I think we know Stroman's going to be a guy in the rotation. We know Estrada's going to be a guy in the rotation. We know Happ's going to be a guy in the rotation.
Right.
Is that the scariest rotation in the league? No. Is it,
if you're a Jays fan,
manageable? It is. Absolutely. Well, yeah, I can believe that. Then the rest of the rotation, they do have some options. Getting Drew Storen does free up Aaron Sanchez to potentially start.
And I think that's really where I was going with this is my personal opinion with Sanchez is when we watched him last year, I got the opportunity to watch a couple of games where he pitched live at the Dome. I really liked his stuff as a starter. I think he has the live arm. I think he has the stuff to do it. And, again, where do you think he shakes out there?
I think that they're going to give him a shot, and they're going to give him a shot in spring training. He started to really come around late. He still struggles with his command as a starter, especially with his secondary pitches, which is a concern. But I think that they want to give him a shot because, you're right, the upside there, the stuff is really good. He's a smart kid. And the upside is there more than say for a Jesse Chavez who can do the job for 140 to 160 innings and give you a few starts and be a reliable guy. I think we always forget when we get wrapped up in rotations, and maybe it's because of teams like the Dodgers that have sort of had super loaded front ends. But I mean, you look at that team like the Dodgers; they had Zach Greinke and Clayton Kershaw, two guys that finished in the top three in Cy Young voting in the National League. And they couldn't figure out the back end of their rotation, making trades for Matt Latos and Alex Wood in season, and the Latos moves completely backfire. And I think we forget how hard it is to fill out rotations, to have consistency at the four and the five spot. And that's the thing, as I think we're going to have R.A. Dickey in one of those spots too. There are still those trade rumors out there, but when you can get a guy for 200 innings, and yes, he's not the ace that I think Blue Jays fans thought they were acquiring when they got him off his Cy Young season with the Mets, but he's a guy that you can rely on. He's a guy that, sure, will frustrate fans, and the knuckleball might be a frustrating pitch overall, but he's going to fill out that spot. And I think that we can't forget about Drew Hutchison, because he's another guy that, stuff-wise, he looks really good. He reminds me a lot, not to go back to the Raptors, but with Terrence Ross. Terrence Ross is a guy who makes it look really easy when he's playing well. Mm-hmm. When Drew Hutchison is pitching well, he makes it look really easy. Secondary pitches are good, live fastball, but on the games when he's not pitching well, you have to wonder, you know, what is this guy doing? He looks like he should be in the minor leagues, and that consistency is lacking. And depending on how much he's worked in the offseason, how he comes to spring, he's definitely a candidate to fill that fifth spot. If he fulfills his potential, that's a guy that you'd love to have in your number five spot in the rotation.
100%.
Now, for this year, I mean, we're looking at a Blue Jays team that offensively is going to be very, very similar. They're probably going to be, if not the best offensive team in baseball, very close to being that. If the Blue Jays are in a push again, based on the fact that Mark Shapiro is not a fan of getting rid of prospects and, you know, shredding his minor league systems, could there be a potential of Shapiro moving either a Jose or Edwin if he knows he's not going to get both to get maybe the piece he needs to push this team forward? Because that's what I'm looking at him potentially doing, because he said it before, he's not a fan of burning that minor league system.
Yeah, I think that it's more of a possibility than it was under the previous regime, especially with them being free agents. And just like the Raptors have a big decision to make with DeMar DeRozan, I think this is a slightly less big-picture impactful decision, but they're going to have to decide what they want to do with two franchise cornerstones. The rumors are already starting that the Yankees and the Red Sox would be interested in both Bautista and Encarnacion. So there's the possibility that, who knows, 2017 opening day, Jose Bautista is playing for the Yankees.
If that happens, Israel, if that happens, honestly, I'm not sure what I'm going to do with myself. If I have to see one or both of those guys, like put journalism aside and put like all my
unbiasedness,
Yeah. That would be really upsetting for me as a Toronto guy. But go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, no, I get it. Those guys have been a big part of the team. They've been extremely productive. And I'm sure that the Shapiro and Atkins' reputation right now is negative. I can only imagine what it would be like next winter if those guys do indeed go to a couple of big-time rivals. But I think it's on the table. I would be surprised, especially if the team is contending, that a guy like Shapiro would be willing to move to one or two middle of the order bats, even to get pitching. It is possible, but I think he recognizes the value, just like the previous regime did, that a great offense is still a huge benefit to have. And we saw it for the most of the last season, just how dominant they were and some of the huge comebacks that they had. And we saw it a little bit in the playoffs too.
Well, Israel, thank you so much for joining us. You've been awesome, insightful, but entertaining. And I would sign you to a David Price deal right now, to be quite honest with you.
Well, I'd take it because that's a nice contract.
We'd lock you in, Israel. But I wanted to ask you quickly before we just let you go, are you going to be down in Dunedin covering some Jays, or what are you up to the next little while?
Yeah, well, it's going to be a pretty busy month. The All-Star Game's in, I guess, 3 weeks now, and that'll be really crazy. So I'll be all over all the All-Star stuff as well as all the big-time Yahoo Sports guys, the guys that are way above me, will be in town and all over the All-Star Game stuff. And then, yeah, a couple weeks after that, I'll be in Dunedin for at least the first week of spring training and
awesome.
The first week of games there. So looking forward to it. I've never been down there to cover it. So
if Joe and I learned anything from our trip to Dunedin covering the Jays last year, two things: tearaway pants and a lot of water. But good luck with the tearaway pants. The PR guys are pretty strict on that.
All right, I'm going to write this down. Give me a second. All right.
Yeah, exactly.
Tearaway pants. Water. Okay.
Yeah. All right. And all seriousness, though, thank you so much. We appreciate you jumping on the show, and hopefully we can talk some sports with you again soon.
Hey, guys, anytime. I enjoyed it, too.
Thank you so much. From Yahoo Sports, Israel Fair.
Well, honestly, it's great having guys like Israel on. He clearly knows what he's talking about. Definitely on point with basketball and baseball.
His knowledge scares me because he does know what he's talking about, and the stuff he was saying at the end, I was like,
honestly,
oh,
no, and that's what I want to get into right now, the fact that he said Boston and New York are going to be stepping up to make major moves to get Edwin Encarnacion and Jose Bautista. The fan in me just died a little bit.
Oh, I know.
The fan in me died a little bit inside, because if even one of those guys goes to one of those teams, which obviously I could see happening,
yeah,
with David Price as well, after the season the Jays just had, I can think about it now in my head. The summertime was just amazing watching those guys. They were never out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Exciting baseball, and yeah, you're going to have to hide all the sharp objects in the city of Toronto if those two guys go to the Bo Sox.
And you know what the worst part is? When he said that, you're like, oh man, that's such a good fit for both of them. Like when you look
He's so right. That's what pisses me off the
so
most is, and he clearly knows what he's talking about. Also, those guys are going to command a you-know-what amount of money.
Well, yeah.
And man, but Joey, come
here,
on.
You know
I could
what?
Deal. I could deal as, and if we're gonna continue down the sad flip story of being a sad Jays fan,
yeah.
Eddie, I could deal with.
Yeah,
I like them both, but honestly, Joey Bats is my dude.
Yeah,
when he hit that dinger, and I know this is like 10 episodes removed, and we're still talking about it.
Well, it was the greatest baffle
of all time.
When he hit
that dinger, man, I was in the basement with my family.
Yeah,
and I don't think I can say it enough. I didn't even look. I just saw the ball go. And I looked up to the ceiling and I pointed. I'm not religious. I don't know if I was pointing to a vent or the hole in the ceiling.
Good for you, air conditioner.
You know, it's just as a special moment.
Man, I was there.
We can relive.
It was amazing.
You were there?
I was there.
At the game?
Yes.
But you weren't a runner. You were just like
crushing pints. No, I was in the 500s. Yes, I was. Okay. Right. I was in the 500s, and I was actually getting everybody to stop pelting people with beer because it was all hitting me.
Yeah.
And when Jose Bautista hit that home run, the best part is nobody in the stadium saw him bat flip because we were watching the ball get the hell out of the park.
Yeah.
And then it went from like crushing beers at like the umps to spraying each other with beer. And the place was...
The good old days.
It was nuts. But okay, so now here's the thing.
Yeah, anyway, sorry about that side note.
Oh, it was so good.
Tangent.
Encarnacion is Big Poppy light. Like, he is going to be Big Poppy.
Well, I hope not in Boston.
But that's the thing. Let's keep him here. If he goes there, that's the spot he's filling. And he'll do it very well. He's got the beard.
He would, of
course.
He's
got the swag.
Okay, well now...
And he's got the bat.
But that's... A year removed.
Right.
We still can enjoy, as Toronto Blue Jays fans and as journalists covering them, we can enjoy that this team this year is still going to be scary good offensively.
Yes.
And Israel mentioned it. Is Marcus Stroman, Marco Estrada, and J.A. Happ, your 1-2-3 guys, is that the scariest 1-2-3? No.
No.
But he said it's serviceable. It is serviceable. And if you've got a lineup like they have...
Mm-hmm.
I think that takes a little bit of pressure off those guys. What do you think, Joe?
Well, I agree. I mean, his point on the Dodgers is probably one of the biggest ones. You look at...
I'm just thinking about that whole interview. Like, we need that guy back on the show.
100%. He was absolutely fantastic. Yeah. It was great. And thank you again, Israel, for showing up. And
much love.
It was so great to talk to you. When he was making that point about the LA Dodgers, it struck a chord with me because you did have arguably the two best pitchers in the National League.
I agree.
And they couldn't pull it off. And then you had the Washington Nationals,
mm-hmm.
who had three superstar pitchers
mm-hmm.
and couldn't pull it off. It's very tough because I usually compare pitching to goaltending.
Okay.
In the NHL.
I like where you're going with this.
But the major difference I find in baseball's pitchers in comparison to an NHL goalie is goalies are not as explosive. Goalies cannot absolutely... like. Stick with me here.
Okay.
You can have the best goalie in the NHL.
Right.
And you will most definitely have an impact.
Okay.
Your team, like, a la the Montreal Canadiens.
Right.
Without Carey Price, they
are not...
I see
what you're saying.
Right.
I see where you're going with
this. You can have three superstar pitchers.
And still not necessarily get the benefit.
And still not be such an intimidating, strong force in baseball. However,
mm-hmm.
I still think you need them.
Well, are we on to something here in the MLB, maybe a growing trend of the long ball is now becoming a lot more important?
Right.
Is your lineup, whereas before, even 10 years ago, and a lot of people will still tend to agree with pitching wins championships, but when you start to look at the teams that you just mentioned, maybe it's more important that you have a balanced bullpen, a balanced rotation, instead of loading up the front end and hoping they dominate. And then if you get to the World Series, we better hope our fourth and fifth guys aren't going. I guess a great example, though, is take a look at the Kansas City Royals.
Right.
That bullpen is absolutely shut down, lights out. And they won the World Series, went to back-to-back World Series. Now look at what the rest of the league is running and doing.
Yeah.
Yankees, Tigers, they're throwing stupid money at relievers.
Yeah.
Mark Lowe got $6.5 million per season.
Yeah, that was interesting.
That's a lot of money for an seventh or eighth inning guy.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. The trends in the league, you know, and that's a whole other topic, a whole other show.
But that's the thing. I mean, you're a baseball historian. You enjoy...
I try.
Right? You look at the pitching numbers, and we had talked to Bob Elliott about this last year when he came in and we're
talking
baseball.
Love Bob. We don't throw a lot of shout-outs out anymore.
Yeah.
Huge shout-out to Bob Elliott, legend and gem, friend of the show.
Friend of the show, best guy, and he is legitimately keeping Diet Coke in business.
Oh,
he
my goodness.
It.
If you ever have Bob Elliott at a function and there's no Diet Coke, see you later.
It's not good.
See you later.
But we were talking to him about stretching out arms and having guys on pitch counts.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at guys that are, you know, Hall of Famers about 30 years ago, all of them used to pitch in like the 250, 300. They had four-man rotations.
But they also smoked a lot of darts.
Right. Hack darts.
Yeah.
But the difference is, I think now you hit it on the head. The trend is the bullpen.
Mm-hmm.
But the difference is that you're not overusing your bullpen because you have four or five guys. You have two closers a lot of the times. You have three setup men. The long reliever is just one guy. Like, it's just like, hey, it's 9-1. Throw in, like, Gustavo Chacin and let's rip this one out of here. Or, like, where's Esmiel Rogers? We're up by 9. Get him in there.
Don't get me started with right? Esmiel Rogers.
But you know what? That's, I think, the trend moving forward that you're going to have to get a lot out of a little.
I like that we're talking trends. We're getting kind of trendy.
We're getting hashtag Ooh. Trendy on Twitter. Nice. I just want that message like, hey, Joe, you're trending on Twitter.
Like,
for a good reason, though. Like, I don't, you know.
Joe, you didn't wear pants to work again, bud.
Yeah,
Joe Narsa should have worn a longer shirt.
Should have worn a long. Joe Narsa, my stomach is grumbling. But getting a little out of a lot is probably one of the toughest things you can do as an organization and as a management staff. And even the great Mike Babcock is struggling.
Here we go.
Getting a little bit out of a lot.
Here we go.
Or sorry, getting a lot out of a little bit. I don't know. I feel like Willy Wonka right now. Take that. Reverse it.
Hold on. And we're back.
And there you go.
Yeah.
Right now, it is probably the Leafs' rock bottom.
Agreed. Wait, did you just segue to the Leafs and I didn't even know it?
Yeah, I'm getting good, eh?
Wow. I'm just going to stop talking.
I'm
go
hoverboarding.
Ahead. Yeah. Okay.
So they've officially hit rock bottom to me. I mean, the team can't do anything. If they get good goaltending, they lose 1-0.
Do you want
to
hear what when rock bottom was for me? And you just said it, though. I know what you're talking about.
Yep.
The Carolina Hurricanes come into town.
Oh.
Arguably a worse team. Probably a little bit more talent, so not. But in the standings, very close.
No, they're actually getting close now.
Well,
they've been streaking.
Well, you know what I mean. Like, oh, now yes. They're going
but
the opposite
the
direction.
But Carolina Hurricanes, I get what you mean.
They're bad. Yeah. So they roll into town.
Sorry for the one listener in Carolina.
Yeah, thanks. They roll in. Hold on, Joe. Okay, now I'm good. So the Carolina Hurricanes roll into town.
Yeah.
And you have Cam Ward injured.
Who I love.
So I know Eddie Lack, whatever, he might be taking over there anyway, blah, blah, blah. This is a team, even if you are the Sad Sack Leafs, you should be getting prepared to battle with.
Yeah.
They squander a 43 save performance to Carolina. Yeah. Sorry, by James Reimer to Carolina and lose 1-0.
Yep.
To me, that's rock bottom. I know it's not a blowout win or anything like that, and you're saying like, Flip, what are you talking about? They only lost by one goal. It's Carolina. Rimes was ready to play that night. He brought it. I could see it from my couch. Those guys on that team should see, hey, boys, you know, Rimes in the zone tonight. Like, he's got this. Like, let's bury a couple here,
yeah.
And we're going to win the game.
Yeah.
Which is what I saw from the team at the start of the year, and I'm starting to scratch my head because they've done a 180.
You know what, though? I get what you mean because it's like—
In terms of hustle.
Yes.
The team's
there's
the same
pushback.
Guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's less— I know it's the same guys, and you're like, Flip, it's Parento. Like,
what
did you expect? When they started playing tough and they started, you know, keeping games close, beating St. Louis, beating teams like that.
Yeah.
Hey, maybe I was drinking the Kool-Aid a little bit, but I still think they can perform better than this.
Well, I think the biggest key, too, for the Toronto Maple Leafs right now is that, yeah, you lost James Van Riemsdyk. So losing Van Riemsdyk, he was your number one piece.
Also killed my fantasy year worse than it already was.
Yeah, that hurt a lot of fantasy.
Ugh.
But the problem is, I think there's only so much that a team can realize that they're not going to win. Mm-hmm. Like, they're going to be like, okay, we're not going to win. They're going to work as hard as they can. And once that first goal goes in, they're going to be like, okay, now, boys. And then they wake up 5 minutes later. The problem is, they're not able to push back because they don't have the goal scorers that are able to push back. And it's been so...
So true. So true.
And it's tough because last night, for example, Bernier had 27 saves in a 1-0 win, and his saves were tough. They weren't from the point. Like, Vasilevsky made a couple big ones near the end of the game.
I think the Leafs could have easily won last night.
100%. The issue is that if the Leafs with Phil Kessel could have easily won last night.
I love how that's where we're going with this.
And I'm not saying that they need him. It's just that one guy who's a game breaker, and they don't have that.
Well, JVR went out, I think, 7 games ago now. Last night was the 7th game or something like that. Let's call it 7. And the stat I read was since he went out in 7 games, they've scored 10 goals.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Like, how are you going to win any games when you're averaging less than 2 goals a game?
And your goalies are playing fantastic, let alone. It's not like
there you go.
And this is something we haven't seen in a while. Like, realistically, other than Jonathan Bernier having a stinker and Reimer having a stinker. Both have been pretty consistent. I mean, Montreal would kill to have this tandem right now in what they have
Isn't
going
that
on.
Interesting? Isn't it, that an very, interesting? Very
okay, we'll trade him straight up. Just for and a fourth. We'll give him that and a fourth for Carey Price. Not a bad deal.
Well, you bring up trades, and I think that other than the losing is probably the other hot topic with the team, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So where do they go with the guys that have honestly performed decently? Like, I know Parento only has 10 goals or whatever.
Yeah.
He's going to get picked up by some team looking for bottom six scoring.
Yeah.
Who else was I looking at the roster being like, that guy's going to be moved for sure? Man.
I already know the guys are going to get moved.
Let's hear it.
Roman Polak's gone.
There it is. There's one.
And I would, you know who I would look to go grab a guy like that? Mm. Dallas.
I could see him going back to St. Louis.
And he'd also be a great fit in Pittsburgh. Somebody with dirty, gets mucks it up, he hits
so
hard.
So Parento, Polak.
Parento is going to be
probably
gone.
Bernier.
Yeah, see, I don't know. I don't buy the goalies. I don't
see
buy the goalies
him going.
Down. Really?
I see him
okay,
going.
Okay, where do you see him going? That's what I'm intrigued about.
Calgary.
Calgary. How many goalies are they going to have? They have Ramo.
Poo.
They have Jonas Hiller.
Poo.
Come on. He looks good.
Sorry, I just really liked the way it was sounding in the microphone.
It does sound really
honestly,
good.
No. I thought I was reading heavy into the Bernier trades before, as you know. And I did see Calgary as a potential landing spot.
Oh, Berkey.
I read a lot of stuff. I know, drinking the Kool-Aid again.
Yeah.
But, and I don't know, maybe I haven't thought about it too much. I see the situations that they're putting Bernier in.
Yeah.
Just like last night.
Oh, they're roasting him.
Right,
but they're roasting him.
But they're putting him in spots where
he should fail.
If he performs like last night, where he performed pretty good,
yeah.
Now teams are starting to have a look, especially because it's only what a 4.5 cap hit next
4.2.
year. 4.2. That's not too bad.
But
that's
can you
not
picture,
too bad.
Can you picture that conversation? Like Bernie's sitting there. It's like it's Wednesday. Babs walks in. He's like, "Hey, Bernie. Yeah, you're gonna play against the Lightning on the back to back. Yeah, but coach, you know, like, I've not been playing too great. I know Bernie, but, yeah, that's why. So
that was so good.
You have to play better, Bernie. You got to bring your lunch pail. You got to pack your sandwiches.
You
got to
bring your lunch
Make
pail.
Sure to bring your grapes and your snacks. And you got to go to work.
Your Babcock is on point.
You know what we should do, honestly?
You should pretend
we should do that.
We had Mike Babcock promoing the show.
Okay, here's what we should do.
Can I interview you as Mike Babcock?
How about next week, what we will do is I will be Mike Babcock. You will interview me after whatever Leaf game just happened.
Okay, cool.
And I will not joke around. I will give you my honest Mike Babcock answers, and they will be quotable, and we'll even tweet them out as like Mike Joe Babcock's quotes of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they'll be decent. But you know what's really bothering me about the Leafs?
What's really bothering you, Joe?
What's really bothering me about the Leafs is, don't you just feel like the core that everybody wants to get rid of is going to stay for like ever?
Well,
like, Bozak's not going.
Loophole's not going.
Loophole's not going.
He's played like absolute you know what's rear end.
And then Fanouf's not going.
But Dion's had a decent year.
Okay.
I'm okay with that.
Kadri's not going.
Kadri's playing good.
Okay, now you see the problems here?
Right.
Where were we a year ago?
Where's Jeff Farkas?
I don't want this guy. This guy's brutal. Oh,
where's Aki Berg?
Did you see my tweet?
Yes.
I was oh, my God. Okay. Anyways, that Dave Keon, it's just going to take one little quick, you know, hook to the left. That Dave Keon celebration was fantastic. The Legends Row stuff was so cool.
Tribute.
And then we were talking on Twitter, and I was saying, like, what is the celebration going to be like in 10 years? Like, so I started giving you some examples. So, for example, I'm picturing, like, he was big, never won anything, kind of was a number one center, but by default, he wore three numbers that no one remembers, Nick Antropov. And you're like, no, and then it's going to get worse, because then with the good teams we're going to have, they're going to be like, Jurke Lume.
If we're talking about it, not too many people really realize that Dave Keon and the Toronto Maple Leafs feuded for 2 decades.
Yeah.
There was a bitter end to that relationship, and
Harold Ballard ruined a relationship.
Yeah,
what?
Exactly. And we won't talk about it too much because honestly, it's not necessarily a hot topic anymore. But the fact that Dave Keon, honestly a true Leaf legend, got his props finally.
Yeah,
it was long overdue, and it was a classy move on behalf of the Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment. But what is it with the Leafs and having a massive ceremony, a massive game to play a lot to play for on home ice and then playing like absolute garbage. They do it all the time, and I'll give you a perfect example. A couple years ago, maybe two,
Sundin.
Three, I was at that game.
Oh, my God.
I'm literally in the first row upper bowl underneath where they're raising number 13 for Mats. It's a Saturday. It's Matt Sundin, their most popular Leaf in the last
against Montreal.
Decade. Against Montreal. I'm like, boys, here we go. This is going to be a fun one to watch. 6-0 Montreal. Yeah. Lay a complete egg. And ever since then, and it's been true, they play like absolute garbo after a opening ceremony like that.
I don't get it either. It's almost like they don't want to emulate the old-timers because they won and stuff. Like, they watch this, and I guess because I'm not... I guess it's because I'm not a pro hockey player. I'm a horrible hockey player. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I'm sitting there, and I'm just like, I'm so amped up. Like, I just want to hit someone. And, like, you know, like, my little brother's walking by me on the TV, and I'm just like, I just want to jack him up like Scott Stevens. Like, he walks by the door and just blow him up, you know? But these guys stand there, and I feel like they don't care. And that's the one that's the one factor I always found interesting when Tim Leiweke was here, when he was like, can we get over this crap? We didn't. Like, his point was, we're sticking by all this older... this old, like, legend stuff and history when we used to win. But, like, you know, we haven't won in 50 years. How about we start developing a pattern in what we want to become and change the way we are as a team?
True.
So I don't believe that wholeheartedly that you shouldn't be honoring these guys. But I think you got to maybe do the tribute while the guys are in the locker room and then have them just come out for warm-up and then the national anthem or something. Dude, I'm telling you, there's no way that a completely different group of Maple Leafs in the last 10 years, every three months, put up a stinker. I just can't believe. I think it's the system behind it. The guys just sit on the ice. They don't care. And the away team, you're always thinking, you know, good road game. Get through the first 10 minutes, chip and chase, and get quick shifts.
It was kind of, it's sad stuff.
Yeah.
You know what could cheer you up, though?
What?
Before we end the show.
Oh, no.
And I know you really didn't want to talk about it.
What are we talking about?
Thornhill's own Milos Raonic,
okay,
made it to the semifinals,
yes,
in the Aussie Open.
That's
yesterday.
Big time.
I was up at the wee hours of the morning. Beat Gael Monfils, the Frenchman. I believe it was 3-1.
Isn't he playing like 14 hours or something?
He will be playing Andy Murray at 3:30 in the morning.
In the morning.
But I just want to throw some love to Milos because he was injured last year, coming off that foot injury, came back to Wimbledon, didn't look ready, kind of did not have a great season last year. This kid is firing bullets, okay?
Right.
I watch this. I'm with you. This isn't a big tennis show. You know, there's not tons of Canadian content, tons of Toronto content. This is a quote-unquote Toronto boy, GTA. We're going to bring in Thornhill.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out my mom.
That counts.
He is serving at an average.
Like 200, right?
Of 150 miles per hour.
Yeah, that's no biggie.
Like, he's hitting like 240 kilometers per hour on the gun. And I'm watching this and I'm like,
that tennis ball needs to get pulled over.
These 12-year-old ball boys need to literally be wearing helmets.
Dude,
and they're wearing those little
that?
Like flap caps.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that flap cap is going to be embedded in your earlobe along with half the tennis ball.
Every time I see them serve it up, you know the guys that have to stand at the back of the wall?
I'm
just like target practice?
I'm wearing a cup.
I'm like, if these guys get one in the jewels, they're going to yak. Like, just literally bend over and yak.
But that's true. But honestly, if you watch Raonic play right now, he's confident. He's smooth. I don't know a lot about tennis. I don't even know what I'm talking about right now. But he's looking confident. And the fact that he didn't draw Djokovic on Djokovic's side,
yeah,
I think is kind of, to me, this is his chance.
Yeah.
You're going to get Djokovic in the final, which he's absolutely dominated the Aussie
Open.
Oh,
yeah.
I think he's won like 5 out of 6.
The guy's good
on
the hard court. I know that in clay, all I know is that in clay, Djokovic is not the strongest because Nadal runs show.
Well, Djokovic in the first semifinal just dusted Federer this morning.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's going to be the winner of Andy Murray, Raonic playing Djokovic in the final.
Yeah.
I really hope it's a close match because I will wake up and watch it.
Yeah.
I just want to see a Canadian win in a spot where they've never won before. Raonic became the first Canadian male to make it to the semis in the Aussie
Open.
Listen,
don't get me wrong. Now everyone's going to be like, oh,
you're upset.
Joe hates,
it's okay.
Joe hates tennis.
You do hate support. It.
No, see, the thing is,
don't tell Martha Kruk.
Oh, she'd hate me. But it's not that I don't like tennis. I respect it. I think the athletes are phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're so skilled. And I do follow it in the sense that I care about what our Canadians are doing.
Yeah, of course.
I know who Federer is, and I watch – a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it really bores me. And it's just a personal preference. It's not like, but I'm the guy who can watch golf.
You're
and that
entitled
really
to
bores
your personal
people.
Preference.
And I can watch curling. So, I mean, I'm weird.
You can watch curling. Are you being serious right now?
Yes. It is the best hangover cure.
Well,
watch curling,
say, wait,
hungover.
How many pops are being ingested?
Before. Yeah, I'm telling you, it's a good hangover cure. Just be careful. Put on mute, because when they're hurrying hard, it hurts the head.
But yeah, in all seriousness, to wrap it up here on Raonic, I just wanted to throw him a little bit of love. He is a Toronto boy. Never had a Canadian in the semis. If you're going to wake up at 3:30 a.m., you know, hit us up on Twitter, because we'll be up on it tweeting, I think. AK doesn't sleep.
He does not. He messages us updates at like 2 in the morning.
He's just steady into all sports. Yeah. So there's our little shout out to Milos. You know,
another point for Milos.
We're tying in all Toronto sports here on this episode. It was episode 31. Joe did the intro, so I'm going to do the outro.
Boom.
For Joe, I'm Big Flip. This was episode 31. Much love to Israel Fair for coming on from Yahoo Sports. Check us out on Twitter. Check out the Facebook and the SoundCloud. Much love for listening, guys.